Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590 The Fan. Blake Murphy, JD Bunkus, Kalish Torfart. Give them a follow at their names on social. Subscribe to this podcast. Rate, review, all that wonderful stuff. They made the critical mistake of letting me introduce a segment with Jeff Merrick. Hope you guys are ready for 25 minutes of Satnam Singh debuting in AEW talk. We're joined now by the host of the Jeff Merrick Show, co-host of 32 Thoughts, the podcast, Jeff Merrick.
Was
how are you, man?
English?
That hurt. That hurt. Just you putting those words together, it like made me feel uncomfortable. I'm not going
to
lie.
That was what we like to call Sportuguese, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. When people talk about sports, cool. You really don't understand. You kind of look at it and go, huh? That's Sportuguese.
We'll see up, if everybody? There's time. Yeah, how are you, man?
Good.
We'll see if there's time for the Murphy and Merrick Random Wrestler of the Week after. But a much more important showdown tonight. Mm-hmm. Alex Ovechkin and Austin Matthews.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that Merrick. Am I muted?
Oh, here we go.
Am I delayed? What's happening? Do I have
I think
a delay?
You're delayed a little.
You might be delayed there. Oh, now he bounced off.
Okay, so Matthews and Ovechkin tonight. And obviously... Yep. As Matthews' season has gone on, we're starting to rank it among, hey, where does this rank among all goal-scoring seasons? He's at 58 through 68. He does the 50 and 50. Ovechkin's obviously the kind of modern watermark with 65 back in 2007, 2008. I know there's a handful of games left here, Jeff, but where, at this point, where do you think you would rank Matthews' season among Ovechkin's best goal-scoring seasons?
I mean, I think it's certainly right up in there. I think it's the interesting thing about Austin Matthews is it's going to sound weird. It's not so much the goals, guys. Like right now, sitting at 58 is spectacular. Where is he going to end up? I don't know. You know, throw the dart, see where it lands. To me, the interesting thing about Matthews is how he scores the goals. And to me, that's the point of differentiation between Matthews and Ovechkin. Now, in the NHL, let me talk about Ovechkin here first. In the NHL, you're not supposed to be able to blow pucks past goaltenders. That's something you do in junior hockey. I remember having a conversation at the Philadelphia draft, the Aaron Ekblad draft, with a scout. And this is after Vancouver took Jake Virtanen. I think he went sixth overall. And we're having the conversation. I'm like, wow, man, this guy blew pucks past goaltenders regularly. And he's going to be a great pickup for the Vancouver Canucks. And he stopped me right away and he said, you know, you can't blow pucks past goaltenders in the NHL. Like, you can't. You can do that in junior. You can't do that in the National Hockey League. Now, Ovechkin is the outlier there. He, on a consistent basis, just flat out blows pucks past goaltenders. We all know where the shot's coming from. We all know that it's coming. It's the OV spot, and he still gets it past goaltenders. He just says, my shot is harder than the quickness of your movement, and he blows it by them. The thing about Matthews is, and this is where... You know, I if the Rocket Richard had style points attached to it, this is where I look at and I give a nod to Austin Matthews. You look at the variety of goals that he scores, and a lot of them certainly cluster around the front of the net. It's the goal scorer's area, right? It's right inside home plate, but he doesn't score much off to the side. It's all in that scorer's area. And a lot of them are 5-on-5. We'll get to that in a couple of seconds. But it's not just the snapshot, which has the best, you know, disguised release probably of all time. Apologies, Joe Sakic. The best disguised release of all time. Okay, like already in his career, we can say that about Austin Matthews. But it's also tip goals. It's slap shots. It's wraparounds. To me, the story of Austin Matthews is as much how he scores these, Blake, as how many he scores. And the other thing, too, certainly it helps you have someone like Marner on your line feeding you, who's one of the most, you know, wildly creative playmaking wingers in the game, you know, cut out of the cloth of Patrick Kane. But a lot of them are 5-on-5.
Yeah.
Right. He's at 43 5-on-5 goals. So I think when you couple, you know, the variety of goals that Matthews scores with the number of 5-on-5 goals, you look at this and you say, not only is this season sort of right up there with some of the best seasons of Alex Ovechkin and maybe even up there with some of the greatest goal scorers of all time, it's how he scores these things. It's not just one signature play that he has or one signature, you know, goal scoring moment. He does it a lot of different ways.
Okay, so this is what I want to do with you today, and why you're the guy to talk to about this. And your
what am I doing now?
Well, no, this is it. This is what I'm talking about, because it sounds really stupid if you go, is Auston Matthews going to be a greater goal scorer than Alex Ovechkin? It's like, okay, man, it's too early in his career, right? Like, we'll see when this thing is a little further down the line.
Stay healthy.
For sure. But
that's what Ovechkin's done.
Absolutely, he does. He's got whatever he's got going on. The trainers that he's got working on that body is like we all got the LeBron James. I spend $1 million a year on my body. I want to know what Russia does for Ovechkin and his body and how he's able to heal every summer the way that he does and stay in shape. He's a freak. Nothing. I'm not insinuating anything. I just I have thoughts. Yeah. When there's certain documentaries that come out every year about certain things. Just say it.
There was a time when, Soviet hockey teams would take, 2 weeks out of their training and go to the Black Sea for a mystery training and come back and you couldn't lift up their hockey sticks. It was weird. I don't know I'm not exactly sure what happened there.
I'm just saying it needs to be considered is all I'm saying. Is all I'm asking for. Okay. But if you look at Ovechkin's career, right, you go to the even strength goals, well, he's fourth in that category, which is incredible. It's an amazing thing. But he's got 284 power play goals. I would say that already he's the greatest power play goal scorer of all time. Like, that's just a no-brainer to me. It's like, that's what defines a lot of his career. It doesn't make you, I don't think, any less of a goal scorer, but I wonder how Matthews can get into a conversation of being the greatest goal scorer of all time. Because that's what we're doing with Ovechkin, right? We do this thing where we go, all right, maybe he doesn't catch Wayne Gretzky, but I've said this before. How close does he need to be for us to kind of modern era this sucker, for us to just go, hey, Gretzky has the record, but Ovi's the greatest goal scorer of all time. He doesn't necessarily need it, right? Like,
he's
don't we already?
No, he's there now.
Exactly. I agree.
He's there now.
I'm with you, buddy. I'm there already. I wonder, though, if Matthews could actually be that guy someday. Like, if we look at what Matthews does and the way that he scores goals, the prolificness in which he does it, and to your point already, the 5-on-5 element, the different variation of the goals. Like, if he scores a 70-goal season, I don't think John Cooper was just trying to gas him up. I think that these guys, you read what other players say about Matthews and his ability to just kind of, like, cradle it on the fly and rip it in the back of the net, his ability to do this is really unprecedented. And I wonder what he would have to do to make this a conversation someday.
You know what he might have to do is stop worrying about being a sulky trophy candidate. I know everybody wants to make every, goal scorer into Patrice Bergeron. I think to me, one of the great underrated skills in the game is the ability to take passes and turn them into something. And Marian Hossa was one of the best. What's the old saying? You can't give a great player a bad pass. Like, Hossa could take it. You could throw it behind him, throw it in his skates. Didn't matter. He gobbled it up like it's a lacrosse ball and grab it and he's off to make a play. Thing is, Matthews does that and he turns it into a scoring chance. Like, that's another one of these sort of underrated skills, I think, in the game that we don't really talk about here. I think a couple of things have to happen for Matthews to get into that conversation. One is health and durability. And if you look at Alex Ovechkin, we just mentioned this, like, he stays in the game. There haven't been, prolonged stretches where he's wearing a hospital bracelet. That's one of the things. And you may look at injuries and say it's a byproduct of luck, maybe, but that's one of the things he has to do. The other thing is out of his control, and that is avoid lockouts. And that is just out of your control. You need to avoid long stretches where there are no games being played. And I think the other two is, stay on a really competitive line. Like, there's, you look at the history of goal scorers, there's always, someone feeding them or someone complimenting them. We look at Wayne Gretzky and we think about players like Gary Curry. We look at, Alexander Ovechkin and we think of, Nicholas Backstrom. Here is Auston Matthews, who's a really creative player in his own right and a great puck distributor, who's also a shooting/scoring threat. And he's also got Mitch Marner getting him the puck. And the thing about Marner is, we've talked about this before, and it's a cliche that I heard in his draft year from one scout who told me, look, here's how you think about Mitch Marner. Mitch Marner doesn't make the right play. He makes the better play. He makes the play that, when everybody is saying, oh, no, don't make that play. No, you're doing so. Okay, I didn't know that was available. Maybe I'll just shut up now. Like, guys like Kane and guys like Marner make those types of plays, and that is a benefit for Austin Matthews. So stay on a competitive team, stay healthy. You know, don't try to, as much as people try to drag you into, you know, becoming Patrice Bergeron, you know, again, there has to be an element, when you look at goal scorers, there still has to be an element of selfishness as well. And I think, you know, a lot of these things go into this.
Jeff, all I took from that is he's got to bump Kerfoot out as their executive board representative on the NHLPA to make sure there's no lockout. If, you know, five, 6 years from now, he's staring
don't
down
on lockouts.
Yeah, he's staring down some Ovechkin records, and he's got to go, and he's got to be a traitor to labor to make sure there are no lost games there.
Yeah, that has happened with various people in the Players Association before, and sometimes they get rewarded handsomely when their careers are over because of it. Like, look, we're seeing, you know, right now a player begin to hit his stride. Like, I still think, and, you know, talk to anyone, you know, in the skill development game, and they still think there's another level that Austin Matthews can get to. But the exciting thing about Matthews right now is we're seeing someone who hasn't hit his stride yet, but is just beginning to hit his stride. So, like, this is the beginning, we all think, of a lot of seasons of, you know, more hyperbole about Austin Matthews, the likes of which is, you know, generally true, because the guy's phenomenal. And, you know, listen, we said it last week, the Hart Trophy favorite. Get used to it, because it's going to be a conversation every year.
Okay, speaking about the trophies, you know, Ovi's obviously got a trophy cabinet with quite a few in there. Some Rockets, some Harts, Art Ross. But how much do you think that matters when we're going to be comparing those guys? It's definitely harder to win those trophies now, I would say. The league is getting even better. You know, Austin Matthews is definitely on pace to get the Hart this year. Is that something that factors into our discussion down the road about who is better, or do those personal accolades not really mean much when you're doing the entire big picture?
I think they come into play when you're talking, like, when the careers are all wrapped up, Ailish. I think that's one of the things that goes into consideration for things like the Hall of Fame. I think when we're having, you know, beer hall conversations about, you know, the Mount Rushmore of hockey, and okay, if, you know, if Alex Ovechkin is on the Mount Rushmore of hockey, who is he knocking off? You know, ditto for Sidney Crosby. We'll see what happens with Austin Matthews' career here. You know, one of the intriguing things here too, and I always think about legacy, is I don't think we can talk enough about where Austin Matthews comes from. You know, born in California but raised in Arizona. Like, this is, you know, as much as Canadian hockey fans kind of don't want to admit it or don't want to talk about it, the rise of Austin Matthews specifically is a victory lap for Gary Bettman. This is the sticking to the vision. This is, like, for every Toronto Maple Leaf fan that complains about, you know, oh, Arizona and what's, you know, how you know, when what happened with the Winnipeg Jets and all. Maple Leafs are benefiting from all of it. Like, you may turn around and say, well, hold on, Merrick, it's a pretty expensive way to get a superstar into the NHL. It's a pretty costly way, and that's true. But, you know, like, this, you know, you look at the, you know, the vision of Southern expansion and the vision into non-traditional hockey markets. Like, more and more consistently, we're seeing players, you know, Matthew Nyes, right? Like, Maple Leafs fans are drooling about this guy. He's Arizona as well. You know, more and more players coming from Florida, players coming from Texas. The California story has been well told, and now we're getting consistent players from Arizona as well.
I
look at all of it as a major victory lap for the NHL.
As long as he doesn't want to go play for Arizona in a couple of years, we'll be happy about his
roots. Hang on. You know what? That's a really interesting point, too, because I've had this conversation with people before. Where, from a marketing/PR point of view, is it best for Austin Matthews to play? Is it best for him to play back home in Arizona to help pop that market? Or is it better, from a marketing point of view, to have someone like Austin Matthews from Arizona playing in a major NHL market, the center of the hockey universe, Toronto?
The only way that market pops off is if they turn the Coyotes into another football team. It's like they go, hey, the Arizona Coyotes are now Arena Football League, and people there will be like, let's go. Like, no, Austin Matthews isn't doing anything for that. Like, they don't care. He's not changing anything when it comes to hockey. And, yeah, my opinion, he's just better right where he is, and this is just fine. Jeff Merrick, thank you as always for making time for the show. We always appreciate it.
Thanks, crew. You guys be good.
Take care, buddy. Jeff Merrick, host of The Jeff Merrick Show and 32 Thoughts, of course. So, It's one of those. It sounds like you're being outrageous when it comes to sports radio talk when we're discussing Matthews and we're discussing Ovechkin and the two in the same breath. They're playing tonight, so that's why we're doing this. I'm never thinking about Matthews, whatever. But I think Matthews is scoring goals in some ways that are different than Ovechkin. I don't want to diminish what Ovechkin does because of what Merrick just said there, where he blows the puck past goaltenders and he just does it with a power. There's a force to Ovechkin's game that I don't think that Matthews is ever going to match when it comes to his goal scoring. But the different angles, the different ways that Matthews scores, his wrist shot, and even strength, it's like modern-day era stats with Ovechkin where he passes Gretzky. I wonder if we end up looking at this thing at the end of the day and where Matthews needs to get. If he can just pass Ovechkin in even strength goals, if we end up giving him that reward someday. Matthews, little over 400 career games, he's at 195 even strength goals already. To give you a little perspective, Tavares, who's played 942, has 271. Like, it's not outside the realm of possibility that in 2 years we see Matthews pass Tavares for even strength goals, and he'll be onto his first like big money unrestricted free agency contract. That's wild. If he can kind of keep something similar to this pace, he's going to be in the top 100 in a couple of years in that category. Like, it's just a pretty impressive start to his career. 5-on-5 wise, he's led the league every single season that he's been a part of it. I just think that there's a roadmap for him, for us to look back and say, hey, who is the most special goal scorer of your lifetime? And the answer is not Alex Ovechkin. It's on the table.
It is on the table. And we can obviously adjust for era a little bit to try to put some of this in context. And you mentioned some of the adjusted stats, and that's what I was just trying to dig up here. Ovechkin's 65-goal season in 2007-08 is, when you adjust for things like era and that, you know, Gretzky and Phil Esposito were shooting on guys with phone books taped to their shins instead of these massive goalie pads. Ovechkin's 2007-2008 is the second best adjusted goal scoring season ever, behind Brett Hall's 86 goal season in 1990-1991. If Matthews were to match Ovechkin's 65 this year, based on this year's adjustment, he would tie him. This offensive environment right now is similar enough to 2007-2008 that the adjustment factor is about the same. So we're talking about, if Matthews scores 7 over the last 9 here, and he missed time in this season as well, he missed a handful of games, we're talking about the second best adjusted goal scoring season in league history. Even if he doesn't get that high, like, it's almost, barring a really big slump here down the stretch, he's looking at a top 5 individual goal scoring season ever. And he's doing this obviously at age 24. Ovechkin did his at 22, so maybe even more impressive. And then he starts to layer season on top of season on top of season. And in Matthews' case, though, what's maybe even more impressive, and I don't know, you laid out the even strength case. He's already tied Ovechkin's even strength goals from that season. He's also significantly ahead in terms of shooting percentage. So when we're talking about how difficult was this to do, what does a modern game look like? Hey, let's be honest, Ovechkin has never really been a 200-foot player. And I know Merrick doesn't want Matthews to chase the Selke and worry about that and make that a part of the conversation, but Ovechkin won 3 Hart trophies by winning the Rocket, and he had the Art Ross in one of those years, but basically he was the best goal scorer on the planet by a significant margin, so he won the Hart because that's really valuable. And Matthews is now matching Ovechkin's best goal scoring season while being a better defensive player and doing more of the damage at even strength. I really don't think it's out of line at all to say, again, barring a collapse these next 2 weeks, this is a top 5 goal scoring season in NHL history.
Yeah, I think that's very clear. I look at it and go, Ovechkin now 487 even strength goals. And I'm not trying to move the marker here. Goals are goals, right? Like, being the goal scoring leader is still 776 overall. But 487 even strength. That's in almost 1,300 career games played.
And they don't get a lot of empty net goals, which I know doesn't matter, but people, you know, will say, yeah, okay, who got more? I'm going to score it on empty net. Doesn't matter. Pad the stats.
it's such an insignificant number for those guys out in this entire thing that it's not really something I've taken into consideration here. My only real point with it is just simply that Matthews, in his career, in, like I said, the just over 400 is at 195. Like, if he continues even close to this pace of even strength goal scoring, he's actually going to be cruising past Ovechkin when it comes to this category, if he can stay healthy. There's a lot of mitigating factors, but I just wonder if he ends up with more even strength goals than Ovechkin, but less goals overall, how people will feel about the two, if it's going to be like the Gretzky, if he doesn't reach Ovechkin and we look at the era adjustments and just the way those two guys played.
I'd be interested to also have, beside these two, a McDavid. Because obviously we are in Toronto, we cover Matthews a lot. The comments about where's the best player, McGod, compare to this would be interesting to kind of pull that up. I don't have the stats in front of me, but if he's on pace for this type of performance, you know, I obviously think that that's an interesting conversation.
This is more just goals, pure goal scoring.
For sure. Goal scoring, where he compares. I see Blake has his hand up. Maybe he knows.
Yeah, so McDavid's last season is his best goal scoring season from an adjusted basis, but it's like 150th all time. So much of what McDavid does is holistic dominance, mm-hmm. right? And you look at, you know, when you start to look at points and assists instead of goals, then yeah, like his season last year was a top 10 season in terms of adjusted points, but it's going to be hard to catch some of Gretzky's top seasons there. And the one weird Howie Morenz season from the 20s where it's too bad we don't have Jeff Merrick on to fill us in on how Howie Morenz had way more points adjusted
basis.
From the
20s.
But Gretzky's 215 point season, you can adjust all you want. You're not gonna sniff that really. So McDavid's got a ways to go there. But yes, obviously his best seasons hold up against the best seasons of all time as well. So all right. Let's do a quick something to chew on. To set us up for what's coming next. James Harden tells Complex yesterday, or James Harden in a scrum that was aggregated by Complex, that heading into the playoffs here, he has, quote, nothing to prove and feels no pressure. This is something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
James Harden with nothing to prove and feels no pressure. We can't speak to whether he feels pressure or not.
He feels none.
In terms of nothing to prove, though, I don't even know if you need to chew on this or you're just spitting it right out immediately, JD.
It's one of the most outrageous quotes I've seen. And this is an era of outrageous quotes. Are you kidding? You just forced your way away from Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving with those two guys in their primes. And you went to Philadelphia. You handpicked your second place that you forced your way to. Second place in 2 years. And you don't feel as though you have something to prove? They just shelled out a ton of players to go out and get you. Joel Embiid, if I'm reading that quote, is like, are part of me? You don't feel as though you have feel as though something to prove. You feel as though your legacy is defined already. You got no rings. You got no meaningful playoff moments. Not like what are they?
Sure,
failures.
Collapsing against the Warriors. Yeah,
exactly.
Exactly. 17 or 27 consecutive missed threes as a team, or whatever the number ended up being.
I hate how confident I feel about the Raptors, and I hate how things like this are making me believe too much, because I think it's good to have optimism, but once you start to trend into cockiness, that's where you get into bad shape. But when I'm looking at this Raptors matchup and I hear stuff like this from James Harden, that's a horrific quote. What are you doing giving that? You feel no pressure? You feel no pressure. You have nothing to prove. Do you think that's what great players say, is I have nothing to prove when they have zero wins under their belts? Or do you think that's what losers say? That's the Russell Westbrook quote where he goes, oh, I'm already a champion because I made it to the NBA. What? Okay, I guess so, but that's not really what we're doing here when we're talking about your validation as an all-time player. Like, it's just nuts. It's nuts to me, and I really think the Harden trade's going to end up a disaster for them.
Well, look at this quote compared to Kevin Durant the other night after they win the play-in, where Bruce Brown, who has the game of his life, gets asked about the Celtics. And within the course of that, he says, now they don't have Robert Williams, so they have less of a presence in the paint, and we could attack Al Horford and Tice. So them not having Robert Williams is huge. And that's an honest answer from like a tactical perspective and you know, being open about what that series looks like. And Durant says after, that's caffeine pride talking. He takes something before the game. It ain't going to be that easy. I tell you that. We respect our opponents. We don't need to talk about what we're going to do to them. I just don't like that. And, like, that's not I mean, there was no indication that like Durant was mad at Bruce Brown or anything. Just like, let's go out there and prove it with our basketball. And I know Harden gets asked the question, so he has to answer, like, do you feel pressure? And, you know, maybe he thinks it'll look a certain way if he says, yes, of course I feel pressure. But everyone should feel pressure. It's the NBA playoffs, and there are no bad teams in the NBA playoffs anymore. Every series looks like it's going to be hell. And if you're Kevin Durant, who is the best scorer on the planet, and you're like, no, we can't take Boston's third string center who might play big minutes in this series lightly, and then you're James Harden and you're like, you know, nothing to prove. My scoring averages are way down. I've never had really individual success in the playoffs. And if I have, it flamed out earlier than anticipated and projected. I don't know. The contrast there is stark. And I want the Raptors to win, obviously. I want a Nets 76ers series too, though, because I think KD would take the Harden thing very, very personal and just do everything in his power to lay waste to him.
I will say the first half or the second half of that quote with I feel no pressure, I can see that being confidence in himself in a way that like maybe can be spun into positive. The nothing to prove is a part that really bothers me as someone that's like obviously played sports. Like you always have something to prove. You are, as we just laid out, you have been a controversial player, moving teams, you know, just doing whatever you want at times. You have something to prove for your fan base, for yourself, for your team. Like that is never a question. A feeling no pressure, when you're asked, like, do you feel pressure? If he was to say, yeah, I feel a lot of pressure, that, you know, that's something that you don't really want to admit. You don't want to go up on the podium and say, yeah, I feel a lot of pressure. Like, you know, I don't know how we're going to do. You want to be as confident as possible and say, I believe in my team. I believe that we're prepared. I don't feel pressure. But it's completely the nothing to prove that to me is where JD said one of the most outrageous quotes. I completely agree. You can never really admit that. It seems like you don't really have anything to play for. And that's the, if I was a fan of that team, I would be very frustrated with just the wording of that heading into a playoff run.
If you're a fan of that team, maybe you're upset with that wording. If you're a fan of the Los Angeles Dodgers, you are apoplectic.
Oh boy.
After last night. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about the decision to pull Clayton Kershaw in the middle of a perfect game. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan.
Breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan, Blake Murphy, JD Bunkus, Ailish Forfar. Give them a follow. Keep those texts coming to 590, 590. Subscribe to the podcast, rate, review, all that good stuff. Not good stuff. Pulling a pitcher in the middle of a perfect game. That's what Dave Roberts did yesterday as Clayton Kershaw spun 7 perfect innings for the Los Angeles Dodgers. There are 2 instances in recent baseball vintage where a pitcher was pulled during a perfect game bid. They're both Dave Roberts. The other one was Rich Hill. I don't think that's what you want to be known as. I don't think that's what you want your calling card to be. Obviously, he's had a lot of success as a manager. But boy, does it suck as a baseball fan, whether that's a baseball fan of history, of Clayton Kershaw, of the Dodgers. There's no way to spin this in which that didn't suck. 7 perfect innings and you get the hook.
I'm really glad that you took this position, Blake, because I had fully prepared to blame people like you for ruining a sport that I love. this is outrageous. Like, this is so, so, so bad. And I saw people defending the decision where they go, and Kershaw's got the elbow thing. And I even saw one guy go on TV and goes, do you want to win a World Series? Or do you want to win? Do you want to win a championship? Or do you want to have a perfect game? Did you hear Clayton Kershaw after the game? Did you guys hear his quotes?
Mm-hmm. He sounded pretty nonchalant about it, no?
Heartbroken. Guy's heartbroken. Talking about it and then being like, yeah, he said, maybe I'll get another chance someday. Was part of the quote. I was gutted.
I wish he was more angry, to be honest.
he can't throw his manager under the bus at the beginning of the season. But I did see other players say, like I saw Dallas Braden tweet, there would have been a physical altercation in the dugout had this happened. It's Clayton Kershaw, okay? You let him decide. It's not some rant. It's Clayton freaking Kershaw. He doesn't have it. It's not a no-hitter. No-hitters are meaningless now, to be honest. Like, they're fun to be at the ballpark for. If you get to see a no-hitter, that's cool. But if you're watching it on TV, like, if someone texted me, someone has a no-hitter on a different team, like a Chicago White Sox player has a no-hitter going, I would say, I don't care. I'm not turning on the television. A perfect game is a must-see event. How many have there been in baseball? Less than 30? Yeah, like, it's so embarrassing that Dave Roberts did this. Dave Roberts, you call yourself a baseball man and you do this. If you took that order from somebody else, embarrassing for you. You stand up for your player. You go up to your player. You tell your player, what do you want to do here, Clayton Kershaw? Because this is historical. And no, it's not as valuable as a World Series, but is it the next thing down? I think it is. And so taking him out of that game, awful for fans, awful for Clayton Kershaw, awful for everybody involved. And yeah, Dave Roberts, I'm sorry. I don't care. You win a World Series this year, I'm not giving you accolades because you didn't pitch Clayton Kershaw an extra potentially 20 pitches to get out of a perfect game.
You're right that no-hitters are not on vogue. We're in the no-balls-in-play era. A no-hitter isn't quite as special. There have been 314 of them compared to 23 perfect games. And guess what? Clayton Kershaw's already had a no-hitter. So if this were a no-hitter, I could get it, right? He's already had one. But he hasn't had a perfect game. No one's had one since King Felix in 2012. The perfect game is still incredibly elusive. And if you're Clayton Kershaw and you look at the resume and you're like, well, I've won an MVP. I've won a Triple Crown. Won a couple Cy Youngs. I've been in the All-Star game every year. Won a Gold Glove. I've won the ERA title. I have a World Series ring. Literally the only thing to check off in terms of pitcher history is a perfect game, and he was right there on the doorstep in no trouble whatsoever. I know pitch count. He was at 80 pitches. It's his first start of the year. He had injuries last year, all that stuff. But pitches aren't the only thing that we measure. We can measure things like fatigue units or pitching load, which is, hey, he only had four counts the whole game that went to three balls, and he struck out three of those guys. These were not difficult. Like, he threw 80 pitches over 7 innings. He was not only headed for a perfect game. A Maddux was in play of under 100 pitches. It sucks. So disappointing.
He's going to go down as one of the greatest pitchers of all time and one of the greatest Dodgers of all time. I think you completely owe it to him. Like, there's just no question whatsoever. He, as you said, with the 80 to 100 pitches, why are we just assuming that, okay, pull him. Like, he looked great. He didn't look tired. 80 pitches is not now the bar. I think if he's going where he is, I just was shocked.
I also thought that I
misread or misunderstood his post game, but the fact that you weren't, I know, a little bit more upset and he kind of like the heartbroken thing. Maybe it just,
did you watch it or did you read it?
But, well, I read it and I'm not getting the context of it, but I feel like the coach comes out there and you say, no, like I'm pitching. Sorry. Like I want to continue. That's where I wonder why you just say, okay, I'm done. You know, this is such a perfect game. You're not going to get that. You're getting older. It's a lifetime accolade. So that's where I was like, where do you draw the line where you say, hey, I'm standing, putting my foot in the ground and I'm going to continue to do this. And where do you say, all right, like, you're right, I'll come out. That's like the biggest thing for me that was kind of confusing.
I don't think that it's on Clayton Kershaw, Ailish. I don't think that it's on him to.
No, obviously, if Dave Roberts has done this multiple times, like it's
not even about the multiple times to me. It's just more like, I get people saying, like, okay, you got to stick up for yourself, but to me, that's a really divisive move, and that is that now you are making it like, oh, Kershaw's selfish, right? He's selfish. He wants to go out there and do that. Dave Roberts is his manager. He has to know already what that means to Kershaw because it means something to every single pitcher. So you're putting him in a position of fail by saying, well, this is in your head. Clayton could have come up to me and said, well, I want to stay in there, and but I had already made the decision. It's like, now you're not a team player. Now you forced Clayton Kershaw to put himself out there as a guy who cares more about an individual success than a team success. The issue here is that it's both. We learned this with the Leafs. We heard the Sheldon Keefe quote, individual success breeds team success. And yes, Do they need Clayton Kershaw there? Absolutely not. If he gets into a spot, if he gets into a jam, can you take him out? Absolutely. He starts to show fatigue? Absolutely. But this is the trend that I'm afraid of, which is that people, like the players and the managers, don't have control of these things anymore. The dweebs that are in the sports science department and the analytics department are now running the entire show here, where they're saying, well, there's a fraction of a percentile, and we'd rather have the fraction of the percentile, and it's taking joy out of the games that we love. And they got to stop doing this. They need to stop just measuring everything by whatever graphing calculator is telling them that this is more likely than the other outcome, or what the added benefit of something is. Like, you shouldn't see something where the whole baseball world is essentially unanimous in a decision outside of, like, the few dorks who are looking at this through the World Series or bust lens. Like, they're not in the World Series. It's April. Let the guy pitch. Let the guy go out there and do something that... Imagine being at that game, too, if you're a fan. Okay, because we never think about the fans anymore. Imagine being at that baseball game and you've got your kid with you, and you're saying, what we're about to see here is history. What we're about to see here, little Ailish, is something that is going to define, like, a defining moment in your childhood. It's going to be a special bond that you share with someone. You go to games because of the hope of seeing something special. You pay a ticket price to bond with somebody, to see something that might never happen, and you had that. It was right in front of you. And then some dork says, well, he's got a weird elbow thing, and maybe is 80 pitches. If he throws 86, then he could... It's horrific. It's horrendous. They need to put fans' priorities back into baseball games. It can't just be simply through the lens of what, again, the graphing calculator says, what the spreadsheet says.
So, first of all, it would be a TI-83 graphing calculator is obviously the one the nerds would prefer.
Can you play Tetris on it? Can you hack it and play Tetris? That's the only thing
I'm sure you can. I'm sure you can. One of my favorite Jays games I've ever been to was Dustin McGowan's perfect game bid. And that, I think, went into the seventh, if I'm remembering, maybe even a little longer.
My friend Sean ruined it. He came in and to the living room when we were at university and said, wow, perfect game. And then, I'm not even joking, hit right after. It was all him.
That's a tough one. What was his name?
Sean Harris. He's a Nova Scotia guy. It's all his fault, I'm telling you. It's literally it's his legacy, is that he ruined that game.
Blake, East Coasters.
We tackled him in the living room in college and beat on his legs for doing it. That was a very college moment.
You gotta whoop his legs, absolutely. But yes, that being a one-hitter, one walk, I think it was against Colorado. But anyway, it's one of my favorite games I've ever been to. And you know, a no-hitter would still be cool. I haven't been to one. But we're talking about there are fewer than two dozen perfect games. It's just, I don't know how you take that away from your guy. And even with all the injury concerns, even with the...
It was like 7-0, too. It wasn't even a tight game. Like, what are we doing
okay,
here?
He had a bad year last year by his standards, and he missed a bunch of starts. Whatever. You have to recognize that a lot of baseball players, especially someone who's had the success Kershaw does, and he's 34 years old, they are baseball geeks, and the chance to be a part of baseball history very likely matters to these guys, especially to a guy like Clayton Kershaw, who, as we've kind of outlined, there are no other boxes left to check. He's done everything. And yes, obviously he'd love more World Series rings, but individually, I don't know. I think you owe it to your guys to recognize how special something like that is. And you know, even if it's against your better judgment with the sports science staff or whatever, give him a crack at it.
He was six outs away. What sports science staff?
I know.
It's just ridiculous.
I know. It was awful. You know what it reminded me of, Blake? It reminded me of, I think it was 2009 when the Colts didn't go for the perfect season, where they played Curtis Painter instead of Peyton Manning, and all of their players were upset, and they were going, we're playing for a Super Bowl. You can play for both. Like, The idea that you can't, that it's some kind of decision that's being defined by this moment has always been upsetting to me. And like you talk, those Colts players are still upset about that. And I'll never forget, I think it was Mathis that had a quote where he was like, nobody remembers who won the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, but everyone remembers the undefeated Dolphins. And it's like, yeah, it's true. You have these rare opportunities for these certain accolades, even in a career, that stand out. And that's what was robbed of Clayton Kershaw yesterday. So I feel for Kershaw, but ultimately at the end of the day, he's a World Series champion. He's a Hall of Famer. He's one of the greatest pitchers of all time. He's a multimillionaire. What I actually do feel for, even more than Kershaw, are the fans. like I said, it's the fans, the Dodger fans that were at that game, or the fans of baseball that got to watch that game, the person who got a text from a friend who flipped over the television set, who streamed the game on their phone and got unbelievably excited that they were going to see a bid for a perfect game, and that it wasn't taken from you because your buddy came in the living room and ruined it, but because a manager and a dork somewhere decided that you couldn't have that moment because of their percentile. It's awful. Like, it really is. It's really, really awful. It's like the rest and recovery thing. We do this with other sports in terms of back-to-backs and certain things like this, but these are debates we have about whether it's you should play LeBron James in a regular season game. This isn't a perfect bit. When did baseball start to be played professionally? To have less than 30 of something in baseball should kind of tell you there's 162 games a year. It's been going on for a century plus.
There's been over 220,000 MLB games.
Yeah.
And 23 perfect games.
Come on. Come on, Dave Roberts. Come on, Dodgers. This has to be... I thought Blake Snell was going to be our eye-opening moment for this kind of stuff where we've gone too far. This has to be a tipping point, Blake. Like, this has to at least be a little bit of a splash of cold water in the face of baseball where it's you can't... It's not all news is... Or what is it? They say all news is good news or all press is good press. I don't think this is good press for baseball. I don't think this is what you want. I really don't.
No, because every headline is what a bunch of fun-sucking jabronis.
Yeah.
Some people in baseball have been. And
bad look for the analytics community, Blake.
Oh, yeah.
Dave, well, I'll turn my back on them right now. this is, but also, like, I would imagine there is, like, a second wave analytics thing that is, like, well, pitch count isn't what you should be looking at.
Yeah.
It should be, hey, how hard were those at-bats? Was he having to throw his fastball at 100%? Or could he get by with, you know, putting 85, 90 on it because he's working low in the zone and the ground balls are coming? And like I said, only four counts that even had three balls of them. He wasn't going deep into counts. And I actually think that, yeah, I think there would be a newer wave of analytics or sports science or whatever that would be like, no, that was a little premature. And I think this is probably one where they had the game plan going in and they just opted not to veer from it. But
That's what I mean too, is like that's what I fear the most, is that they went in, they said this is Kershaw's pitch count and this is the plan, and the plan is the plan, right? And that gets communicated from up top where they go, when we give these things down the line, this is the way that we're going to be doing things. And I just can't believe that Dave Roberts wouldn't have stuck in his neck out a little bit here and just said, you know what, screw the plan, this is Clayton Kershaw, I'm riding my guy. I'm letting him get a shot at history, and I'm rewarding these fans. Like, they also have a World Series now, too. And not to say that, I think that defining it that way is though the Dodgers made some decision about, like, should we win the World Series or get a perfect game?
One game.
Like, well, yeah.
Well, you may as well shut Kershaw down for the season then.
Yeah.
And have him ready for October.
Yeah, skip his starts. By the way, quickly here, I know we don't have a ton of time. And text in if you got thoughts on it, DM, do all those different things. But the Jays just kind of quietly under the radar, and by quietly under the radar, I mean I missed it until Blake put it in our doc, that they're moving to a six-man rotation to bump Ryu this early in the season. One, why would you ever skip Manoah? Like, why would you bump Manoah back given where they're at right now? But two is like, how... We did It's Early, But We're Worried About Ryu. I don't know how you couldn't be, like, terrified after hearing this news. Like, this early on? We got to ask someone if this was always part of the plan, but it doesn't seem that way to me.
We did kind of tee up the season that it would be... It was certainly possible with 30 games and 31 days. The curious part for me, though, is that... And to be clear, like, it makes sense earlier in the year because guys aren't fully stretched out and Ryu had the late start to spring and all that stuff. But they have an off day Monday. You have a natural extra day off already built in. But yeah, the Manoah thing is the part of this I really don't like, where you're now going to go Gausman and then Stripling and then theoretically, I'd imagine, Ryu and then Manoah. So Manoah's also getting an extra day skipped, and then he'll get another extra day skipped because they're off Monday. So suddenly your best pitcher is on the same plan that your shortened workload guys are. And maybe it works out. Maybe it lets Manoah go seven innings a little more often over the long haul. But yeah, I didn't love that one. Like, I think if I were going to do it, if you throw Stripling Friday, I'd still have Manoah go Saturday on normal rest and Ryu just gets an extra day.
You should be prioritizing Manoah. He's your guy. Like, he's in a groove. He's what we said before last night. He's the ace. Like, if he's in a good mindset, he's confident, you know, he clearly believes in his stuff, you want to prioritize that, in my opinion.
And in a season where everything matters a lot, like the idea of, unless there's something, there's some red flag in his post-start workout or something they saw on the start or something like that, the approach should be start the best pitcher who is 100% available and is on normal rest, right? Like if we had a fatigue bar or an energy bar for a guy, once that's at 100%, who's the best starter available? That guy starts. And I know that that could lead to some awkward longer Ryu breaks or whatever, but yeah, we'll see. If this is the regular thing where Manoah is also getting the extra day of rest here and there, and to a lesser extent, Gausman and Berríos, I will like it less. A
couple Texans saying that Charlie actually said that moving to six was always a possibility because they got 30 yep. games in 31 days. So maybe that snuck under.
Is that a text from me? I just said that.
Yeah. 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 But yeah, we knew it was always a possibility. I mean, that like possibility and plan are two different things. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's always a possibility with Ryu. I don't, again, my major issue is that they skip Manoah. I don't know why you do that. If anything, it's just like throw Ryu even more rest then. Like bump him back even further if this is the main reason for the plans.
Let him throw a sim game on Friday where he'd normally start and let
exactly.
him go 3-4 innings or whatever. And
exactly. And then have him go Tuesday, right? Like reset the rotation with him going Tuesday. Yeah. I'm a little concerned that, again, possibility became the plan because you got to figure that that is the main impetus for said plan, is that they're worried about Ryu already. And if you're worried about Ryu, well, it's his second start of the year. Giving him rest already, and prioritizing it over making sure that your true ace is on the mound isn't a great sign. It's also not a great sign for me, who has tickets for Friday's game and is going to see Ross Stripling start. Got to tell you, my brother coming in from out of town, and I go, hey, here's this exciting Blue Jays team. And he's like, where's Teoscar? I'm like, he's hurt. Where's Danny Jansen? He's hurt. Where's any pitcher? Oh, that's Ross Stripling. I thought we had the best rotation in baseball. Well, this guy's better than people say he is, buddy. That's what kind of a game we're lined up here for.
Yeah, on a holiday, no less. Sucks that that's the one your brother's going to get. But hey, it's the Oakland A's, so maybe they'll beat the brakes off him anyway, and Stripling will have a nice little outing. I'm with you on the Ryu concern. I don't know that this is concern about Ryu so much as, hey, he did get the late start. He only started one spring game. Like, he's not fully stretched out, whatever. But your bullpen's been pretty heavily taxed also. And Stripling is not a guy that, like Stripling's not going six or seven. That's, you just penciled in a 4-inning plus bullpen day. Like, you probably try to avoid using Trent Thornton tonight because, you know, if there's a long reliever needed on Friday, you need him for that. So, I don't know. There's a trickle-down effect here. And the off day Monday would have solved a little bit of this for them, at least Ryu's next time through the rotation. But it is what it is. Everyone's erring on the side of caution. Only one pitcher has thrown 100 pitches so far this year, by the way.
I'm going to get Ross Stripling and Anthony Kay piggyback on Friday, aren't I? This is the way this is shaping up. That's what's going to be, is that this is just what we get here. Is it's going to be a horrible bullpen day of like all the bad bullpen guys. They're going to trot them all out there. And I'm going to need – I guess the way to put this is that it's either going to be wildly disappointing or it's going to be a really exciting game, because the Jays are going to need to score like 8 runs to win this sucker. So I better hear the horn many times for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Let's see some bombs, because otherwise it's going to be a tough Friday night.
This reminds me of like 2011, 2012 era Jays minor league, when they had a bunch of pitching prospects and they were piggybacking them regularly. Like, they had 6 prospects at single A and they would, you know, oh, Justin Nicolino is going to pitch 3 innings, and then Sean Reed Foley is going to pitch 3 innings, and this is just how we're doing it. And little early analytics me is just like brain exploded, like, oh my God, this could be the new way to do it. And then you realize, like, no, you need like a 35-man roster to do that regularly. But it was like a pre-opener developmental plan. Anyway, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I know Stripling threw 75 or 80 pitches in spring, so maybe it is a true start and not an opener situation. But you don't love being like, you're not the Tampa Bay Rays. You're not built to do a bullpen day every time through the order. So here's hoping Stripling has a good one.
I just think it's one of those scenarios where it's one of those, hey, would you sign up for 4 innings? Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, you take that immediately. So what that sets up, though, is Ryu on the bump on Saturday, most likely, against the Oakland A's. And that game will roll right in to the Raptors playoff opener against the Philadelphia 76ers. It'll be a Super Sports Saturday in the city